Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a friend of the show, one of my favorite people, back on so that we can find out the next iteration of what's coming down the pipe. I want to welcome again the Common Core Diva, Miss Lynn Taylor. And today we have, you know, just, it never ends, Lynn. It's like this rolling hill of things that's coming at us 24/7. But I know you and I are both a believer of if you can see it coming, understand it, then you can navigate it in a way that's going to bring you the best possible outcome for you and your family. So I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I know how busy you are.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Dr. Elena. And as always, it is such a joy to be with you and your audience as well. And I hope that your audience will take time to check out my blog, commoncorediva.com. And you can email me at info@commoncorediva.com, and we can set up a way that we can speak in person or online for any group.
That's excellent information. I hope people do take advantage of that. You know, it's like a grid. Our puzzle, I should say. We put a lot of pieces into place to figure out what's coming. And every time I think I understand it, there's something else that you come up with. There's something called the collective caregiving and citizen caregivers. I just want to start off with, what is that?
Well, thank you so much for asking. Collective caregiving, I want you to stop and think of, if you'll remember back a few administrations ago, we heard about the village raising your child. Well, this is village raising your child 2.0 and then some. And let me get to the proper page so I can show you what I mean. Okay, citizen caregivers. Well, you know, that's a fancy way of saying we're going to put everyone, including the parent in some ways, but then also excluding the parent, in charge of your child. And what I mean by this is it's going to tell you that, to ensure that your child and my child and everyone else's child has to be able to succeed in life here in America and wherever else, is that they have to have a collective social responsibility. Well, let's see here. If that's just given to the individual caregivers, the parents, that's not going to be enough. So in other words, you and I have to become a citizen who is so engaged in this mindset, Dr. Elena, that we have to make it our business to help you raise your child, whether or not the way we want to raise your child is the way you want to raise your child.
I mean, that just sounds so out there. I mean, first of all, the first question is, what kind of template are they using? Certainly the parents aren't involved from what you just described. So where is this being driven from?
Okay, this is being driven from the government, and especially where policies are concerned. And as we have said on so many of our shows together, that policy is not necessarily the law. Okay. And when it comes to parenting, there is no law that can remove your rights of being a parent, because those are God-given, okay? Those are inalienable rights that no one can take from you. Now, the government can try to hindpin you into ways in which they think you should parent, which we've also talked about in other shows as well. So this is giving you a mindset that instead of the diversity, equity, and inclusion, this is coming up with what's known as CIE, or collective, inclusive, and expansive. Now, let's break that down for just a minute. Caregiving collective, okay? That means we have a group of people, not necessarily the parents, but the parents are supposed to be in there somewhere, whether they're given first place or, you know, last place. And we have seen this in education, especially since Every Student Succeeds Act went into law. We've seen the parents come in as almost like an afterthought. Inclusive. Well, that means we have to broaden everything that we do to include everybody, because if we don't, then we can't be that kumbaya collective society. And expansive. This is where parents should be very, very concerned, because expansive means that the government and those they work with to bring this agenda to fruition will expand their outreach, their services, their power, and their money.
I can only imagine what that means. My segue is, where's this money coming from? Is there a specific pot? Is this UN money? Where do you think it's coming from?
Well, it's probably going to be coming from what I can glean from this particular information. It looks like it's going to be a collective effort between public-private partnerships, which we know is fascism, which our government really, really loves, because after all, we can pump up those social services. So it'll probably come through not only education, but health and human services as well. You also need to understand that this is going to go in and affect local government, as well as state government and federal government. And again, this is something that is very, very concerning. Now, the government and these nonprofits and these corporations that are in on this agenda, and we've got Frameworks and Leading for Kids, we've got the Robert Woods Foundation, we've got so many other organizations that are feeding into this. Hang on just a second. Let me give you the list, okay? Mm-hmm. We have the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I have exposed that on my blog before. We have the Children's Hospital Association, Leading for Kids, which is a nonprofit for the health and well-being. This will tie a lot to the public universities that we have. The Children's Hospital Association only oversees about 200 hospitals nationwide, but they champion policies and practices that influence Congress. This is where our parents could really be a seat at the table. They also participate in how Medicaid and CHIP funding is used. And CHIP is the Children's Health Insurance Program. Medicaid is also tied to education through the Title I funding. Then we have the leadingforkids.org, which I've already... They have ties to the Packard Foundation, the DeVos Hospital, as in Betsy DeVos, former Secretary of Education, Campaign to Grade Level Reading. We did a show earlier this year about RX for Kids, AmeriCorps, which you know is part of the government, and then the Kaiser Family Foundation. We also have the Frameworks Institute, which was founded by Susan Bales, and she has been considered an expert who's been published widely on framing science and communication for social good. So in other words, we're going to take Frameworks, which is a group of linguists, sociologists, political scientists, psychologists, and narrative experts in communication, and they're going to use that to nudge society as a whole to change the conversation on something like parental caregiving and turn it into collective caregiving. And they even give you examples of how to change the conversation in this particular document. The leading areas that they're working in right now are child development, health and economic justice, justice reform, and racial justice. Now, does this smack of the UN? It absolutely does, because this will in turn unite with Sustainable Development Goals number one, which is no poverty. Two, I believe, which is hunger. I might have those two mixed up. Three is healthcare. Four is education. Five is gender equity. And 16 is partnerships.
Well, you know, but you just said education is number four. I mean, yes. That's the whole mm-hmm. point of school. It seems to be completely backward. It's very interesting. Most right. of the things that you talked about is about social engineering.
It absolutely is.
Unbelievable. I mean, where's the three R's? I don't see or hear anything about developing, obviously I know this is kind of I say this in jest, no critical thinking skills, no reading and mm-hmm. writing skills, no ability to be self-sufficient. It's all about how you feel. And of course, right. there's a conflict of interest I'm seeing all over the place with these hospitals. Mm-hmm. And various healthcare foundations involved. Who stands to gain? If you can make enough diagnoses on kids and you can actually put them in a pipeline where they need some sort of medication, and voila, you're the place that they have to go. You know, or
right. Well, exactly. And then you've got a hospital association that's right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, it is crystal clear to see. And when you look at the fact that the Every Student Succeeds Act gave a huge power increase through the Department of Health and Human Services. And this is when we started to see some of this whole child garbage. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you put a child into a public school or any type of school, their whole being is there. So this whole misnomer that we somehow only educated part of the child is part of the narrative that they're now using to say, oh, well, this is just a for now why we need to have the health and well-being of Johnny and Susie. But I wanted to point out one thing before we get into our break. This particular paper that I'm reading from or getting my notes from is called Collective Caregiving, and I'm sure we can put a link in the archives for folks to be able to read it. I think it's about a 15 or 20 page document, but they redefine what caregiving is. And I think that was one of the things that you had asked about. Mm-hmm. Here it goes. We can bring children into the center of our policy conversations by redefining caregiving as a social responsibility and collective endeavor. One that includes but extends far beyond interpersonal relationships and private interactions. Caregiving is something we owe not only to our own children, but to all children in society. It connects to every other social issue and is therefore implicated in every aspect of our shared decision making.
That
now, first
creepy.
Of all, the entire document uses the word kid as opposed to children. And why is that? Because the government doesn't want to use the God-fearing, God-respecting parental definition of children. They want to use the urban definition of kids, because a kid is usually some sort of animal that can be divided up and or shared, if you will. So this is how our powers that be are framing our children. They're not looking at them as children. They're looking at them as profit and gain or something to be divided to fit their agenda.
And that's in so many different ways, from their mental capacity and their mental health to mm-hmm. their physical well-being or physical health. Somewhere you can make them a cost center, it sounds like.
Right. But let's stop and think about something, Dr. Elena. When you look at a public, it is a, if you look at the textbook definition, it is a form of government. And government is absolutely 100% incapable of the one thing that humans can do, especially parents, and that is love. Now, caregiving is a loose extension of modern day schools. And some people have even gone so far as to say that they're glorified babysitting services. Well, look at what's happening in our schools. We could absolutely see where this is coming to fruition. This particular redefining of inclusive caregiving, or the CIE, as they were talking about it, will use the race card. Let's remember one thing. Skin color is going to not mean a race. There is one race, and that is the human race. We all have the same blood. We don't have different race blood, okay? That's just a total, total government snow job on every person out there. But this is going to use that one more time. And then if you'll remember when we did our Rx for Kids interview, we went over some of these very same points. And it was a way for the government to get into the domain of caregiving, because it's going to somehow right all the evils of society.
Well, we know that's not going to happen, but I can imagine how much power it can arbitrarily, really, because who decide? This is so vague. When you read these platitudes, there's no real concrete, you know, boundary to this. It can be used, expanded to what it, you know, what they want it to be. Depending on the situation, depending on the parent, depending on the mm-hmm. location, I can imagine, depending on the region of the country, you name it. And it just never ends, because there's no boundaries to it. There's no end point to it. But they have ultimate goal in being able to manipulate it and control it in a way that if it doesn't serve the end of the, I guess, the whole, the community, they'll just change it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this whole paper, this whole webinar that came with it, and everything that supposedly is the scientific imperial evidence is nudging society to drive a force that will need to show that government is going to define who you are and envelop all aspects of your health care. Now, remember, we're not talking about an adult's health care. We're talking about children, mm-hmm. being one of the most vulnerable populations out there. And we've got a corrupt government already who has a horrible track record with exploiting children. And we're going to trust that same system to somehow now come in and go, oh, yes, we're going to be the peace building. And that was sustainable development goal number 16. It wasn't partnerships at 17. 16 is peace building. So that's what that was. So I do apologize about that error. But I want us to stop and think that parents are created by God. They're not created by our government. Our government is now going to, through this particular collective thing, they're going to designate who's worthy to be a part of a caregiver in your child's life. Do you really think you want to trust the government to assign that much responsibility to a child who you created, you nurtured, you loved, you cared for, you've done everything for, and now you're going to have someone come in and go, oh no, honey, you can't do it that way. You have to do it this way.
I think that's a really good place to take a break, because you've just crystallized a lot of the end point, you know, what the outcome is. And I think people get very caught up in the day-to-day and what's in front of them, but they really need to think, you know, zoom out and think of the bigger picture. From what you just said, teachers are not really involved with this and parents aren't involved with this. And those are the two aspects, especially of the education system, that's the front line. They don't seem to be making any choices in this system. So I'll let you answer that when we come back. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And before the break, it seemed to me that we were taking the power away from the people who the system, education system, just like in the healthcare system, it's the doctor and the patient. But in the education system, it's the teacher and the parent. They're on the back burner here. And you have all this algorithm driven, I can imagine, in these groups that basically are carving up a pie. They all have something to gain. It's not necessarily, and if you know, let's be honest, this is human beings here. People love power. Anybody who can seize it, I don't think they ever want to give it up. And right. It'll always be something that they can seize more and more until what's the point of this system, right?
Right.
So from the teacher standpoint, do you see the teachers, now that, you know, you were an educator, you've now stepped back from that. But in your heart of hearts, as a former teacher, how do you think teachers feel about this or would feel about this type of system?
Well, I think those who are still blessed enough to be of the mindset before Common Core came in that, you know, the family is the boss, not necessarily the school, I think they would absolutely be beside themselves about this and be joining us in saying, no, this is not right. This is not what we need to do. Now, those who are in the system who have bought into this narrative, they're going to support this all the way.
That's really tragic. And
yeah, it is.
I know I always ask this question and you always give me kind of the same answer, but is there an out with homeschooling? I mean, is there some way out of this, off this plantation, reservation, whatever you want to call it?
Right. Homeschooling will protect to a degree, but we have to understand that with the continued lies about how school choice is going to give more freedom to those who homeschool, we have to understand that's Common Core math. You cannot improve upon 100% freedom. And the school choice argument is that you can use funds from the government to go to educate Johnny and Susie in whatever way that you need to. But what we need to understand is that that's a backdoor assault. Not only is it misusing the taxation and creating taxation without representation, it's also going to be a way to erode the right to vote. And people are going to say, well, how is that? Well, when you start messing with taxation without representation, you go into constitutionality. And constitutionality said we were guaranteed representation, which meant the right to vote. If we start taking away the right to vote on something as simple as school boards, it's not a far stretch, especially with this collective caregiving garbage and how it will attach itself to legislation as well as taxation. And we can get into that just a little bit. They're really showing the hand, and it doesn't matter if it's a Republican-led administration or a Democrat-led administration. This is going on under our noses, and it will continue to. So anyone who's telling you universal school choice, that is going to be a huge warning, because universal means not just those in public school. It means those who are in private school, parochial school, homeschool. So know that is a poison carrot that's being dangled to tell you, oh, you've got free government money, you can go do what you want. But then when it comes time to pay the piper, you have to get curriculum from an assigned list, or you have to dance to this tune or this policy, and you have to raise your family in the way in which this collective caregiving is setting things up.
You know, I just saw a commercial, and I guess this is a segue to what you just said. There are some states in the country where there's very little oversight. You know, if you homeschool, right, No one's really telling you what to do. You don't need a curriculum. And there was some advocacy group that was trying to gather information, not directly from the parents because they weren't going to give it up, but some sideways way of figuring out who was homeschooling their child. So it's all about capturing data, no matter if you think you're free and you're out of the system, there's always somebody trying to grab you back or at least get information on you.
Right. And the census is a big clue into all of this. And, you know, the census is becoming more and more intrusive about what data it is collecting. And it's part of this policy garbage. It really, really is. Now, I know one of the questions you have for me is, how is this supposed to impact the family unit? Now, on page 10 of this documentation, it tells you right here that it's going to, let me just read it to you. We can, we know that the expanded child tax credit, or the CTC, was effective in D.C. because Black and Latin parents told us so. They described being able to use the associated cash payments to buy food and clothing and to pay rent and utility bills, which cut the district's child poverty rate by more than half. Well, now, okay, what is this telling us? It's telling us here that this collective caregiving is going to find ways to expand supposed credits so that you can become more dependent on the government, not less dependent. And let's stop and think about it. When our nation was founded, it was less government, not more government, not government take care of me and feed my family and clothe my family and educate my family. It was, let me educate my family, let me feed my family, let me work, you know, that sort of thing. And so now what we're seeing is, with this expansion of these policies, that's precisely what they're going to go in and try to do. So they're not going to come at you they may not come at you banging at the door saying, give me your child, but they sure will come through your pocketbook, through your taxation, and impact your family as well. Let me see. There's another caveat to this as well that will impact the family as well. All right. Give parents and other caregivers a clear role in their collective part of caregiving. All right. For example, now this is where nudging comes in, because all through this document, these boxes are going to say, instead of saying this, say this. So we have coaching scripts, my dear, already set up for you, so you can go in and change the conversation to fit their agenda. So here was the example. Okay, what was once said? As families in New York State are facing widespread shortages in child care, the Children's Agenda is calling for change. Through a coordinated letter writing campaign, the organization is pushing for dedicated state funding. Well, see, we can't say that anymore because it's not collective enough. So here's how it's reworded. As New York State faces widespread child care shortages, a multiracial coalition of parents is demanding we deepen our collective commitment to care. A letter writing campaign led by parents spells out the need for dedicated state funding. Do you hear the subtle changes?
Yeah. Wow. You're absolutely right. It's a slippery slope. Once you have, nothing's free. You take this money or you're somehow in the system and you start depending on it as part of your, you know, your household economy, it's going to be very difficult to give it up. And then I think strings will be attached that you have to do X or Y to get it. Once they get you, they're going to keep you in there by hook or crook.
Oh, absolutely. And they're going to expand ways to keep you there. And what better way to do it than holding your children hostage?
Yeah, that's the parent's weak spot for any parent, right? So instead of doing the opposite, which is to give the parents the opportunity to be, to make more money, to be more successful, to have more that they can give their own family in the way they want to do it, it's all about siphoning it off and making people, I don't know, completely dependent. This reminds me of that sustainable income, and it's coming at it from another direction.
It absolutely is. And, you know, think about the universal basic income that was kind of tied to the RX for children. Mm-hmm. I know they said RX kids, but I really am getting to the point where I cannot stand to hear the word kids when it's related to humans, because that's just not who God made us to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was tied to the universal basic income. We're seeing that gain a lot of momentum through a lot of the social movements that we're talking about earlier.
I mean, is there anything, and I know this is kind of a huge question, but is there another group, educators, anybody else trying to thwart this? It just seems like this is an unrelenting march towards, that they would like this to be, I should say, towards ultimate government control over every aspect of a child, of a parent's ability to raise their child.
You know, if there is a group trying to thwart this, I would love to meet them. I would love for us to, you and I, to sit down and have a conversation with this group, because what we need is not just a group, we need several groups. Mm-hmm. We need several well-positioned people, because this is how the other side is so successful at driving this, is they have people in key positions. They have more organization. So yes, if there's a group that's listening to this, who can, you know, help us put rubber to the road on this, let's seriously talk, because there needs to be a huge pushback on this, because there's not been a huge pushback on a lot of things that have come down the pike since the Common Core machine rolled into town, or the Every Student Succeeds Act was put over us, or the unity with the United Nations in creating this village idiot mindset.
I think you could have said it better, and that sets up a call to action for anybody, whether they're grandparent, parent. It affects society, quite frankly. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor. You know, Lynn, you've just raised a huge question mark that everybody listening should have in their minds. Because none of this is about health. You know, I can't imagine a child having to be reared in this type of education system. You're constantly taking tests. They're grading you on how you feel, which is completely subjective. And child, you know, they feel one way every different day of the week, right? So are there studies on this agenda? To me, when they say change, I start running, because it never is a good change. It's just something that keeps you going along the same pathway. So I know that we brushed over who stands to gain, but are there studies that they're coming up with that say this is effective, that it's safe for children's health mentally and physically? I don't see anything that quantitates this in a way that there's a control, there's a real experiment where you can say, hey, we kind of know what the outcome is. It's kind of like they're winging it, hoping that the outcome will be the way they want, but nobody can say what's really going to come out at the end.
Right. Well, here's the crux of the matter. There are countless studies done that we know about and countless studies that we don't. And you're going to, depending on who's funding it and depending on who is researching it, you can come up with cherry-picked evidence so to speak, to fit any part of this narrative or to disagree with it. It's kind of like when the Supreme Court passes a decision, there's always a dissent, okay? Mm-hmm. So this particular group, Frameworks, this is from their introduction. Let's see here. It says here that they are using empirical evidence. Here's one example. As laid out in our accompanying research report titled, What Does Caring Mean? This reframes strategy to redefine what care is and is backed by solid empirical evidence. Now, that's going to placate those who make legislation because they're going to see solid empirical evidence and they're going to go, done. They're not going to question whose empirical evidence, how that empirical evidence was what was collected, and how solid is it? Because as we have seen, the studies that are coming out are about as solid as who funded it. And depending on who funded it is what the agenda is. So can we really trust how solid it is? Can we really trust how empirical the evidence is? Because you know what? We're still operating under, and this is not just in America, this is everywhere. We are still operating under an internationally accepted mindset from UNESCO, which is the Education and Culture Organization of the United Nations, that they can direct the science and manipulate it to fit any of the things that need to happen in order to bring these collective partnerships to fruition. And that's been going on, my dear, since 1948.
Well, empirical evidence is not science. And I'd love to, you know, if someone was a critical thinker, I would think they would say, mm-hmm. Where are your studies and what are your results and how large were your studies? You're trying to extrapolate this to an entire country, if not world, but without any, I mean, that doesn't even make sense unless you're trying to create, you know, an outcome that benefits what you want it to.
Yeah, and this is going to be an example, and people are probably going to listen. They go, "Oh, well, she doesn't have any backing for this." I cannot remember which interview we did this on, but we looked at the number of participants in one of these supposedly solid imperial evidence-based strategies, and I think we discovered it was like maybe 400 people. Mm. And yet they're saying they're not saying, okay, we studied 400 people and here are our results. They're saying, well, 100% of the participants, blah, 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 blah. Well, when you hear something like 100%, you're going to say, oh, well, that was a massive study group. And you come and you find out, and it's not even the population of some towns, but yet this is what's driving the narrative. Do you see where the problem is?
I do. I mean, this is the exact same template as we see in healthcare. And things that are treatment regimens and how hospitals decide what the formulary is and the protocol, it's based on the same thing. And, you know, if you need, I mean, my mantra is always follow the money. If the people underwriting this have, you know, a dog in the hunt and stand to gain with the outcome, they shouldn't be the people that you listen to and follow. You know, that there should be somebody who doesn't have anything to gain, an arbiter, you know, an independent arbiter. We don't seem to see that anymore. Politics enters every day on this thing. You've got these UN, you've got the NGOs, which are literally running policy throughout the country. Doesn't matter what it is, it seems. And these small, I don't think they're small, but they definitely have an agenda that's unique. If they're deciding what constitutes standard of care or standard practice, or how someone should be educated, or worse yet, from what you just said, how someone is able to parent their child, which is sacrosanct. I totally agree with you. Nobody should be in the mix with that. And this is soft, but it could become a very hard grid if we're not careful, like you said.
Absolutely it is. And you know, the encroaching on family privacy, you brought it up a little bit ago and you said about the data. Here's what this particular report says. All right. Let's see here. Emphasize that we owe collective care to children of every race, ethnicity, and identity, and not just our own kids. Now, why we need this. Throughout our nation's history, the kinds of public support and services that promote positive outcomes in children and families have been overwhelmingly concentrated within white communities and actively denied in the communities of color. Now, it goes on to tell you that the only way that they can do this is to collect data.
It's all about the data everywhere.
Yep. It is. Now, here's another one of the examples about what we can't say anymore about data and what we should be saying. America's most vulnerable and underprivileged children deserve comprehensive representation and all the resources possible to help them heal from past trauma and begin to thrive. Now, wait a minute. We got trauma in here?
I know. Where did that come from?
That wasn't brought up before. Uh-huh. All right. Here's the new way to talk about it. America's children are our children. Let's make sure we care for kids of all races, ethnicities, and backgrounds by giving them the tools to succeed, a supportive cushion in hard times, and the resources to thrive. And what they don't tell you while they're telling you all the Susie Sunshine garbage is that the way they find out who is traumatic and who is dealing with this, that, and the other is through the data trails that are set up through this collective care. It's also going to go into acts like the Consolidated Appropriations Act, which puts the administration in charge of well-being for your children and your families. So by pushing forward something like this, you're going to go into what the child eats, where the child lives, what the child is thinking.
Or so they say, you know, what they believe,
yeah.
Right? It's not like you're even asking the kid or the child, sorry,
right.
The child. And they couldn't tell you if they wanted to as a 3, 4, 5-year-old teen. They're not mature enough to even say. I mean,
well, the underlying goal for every bit of this collective caregiving, you can find on page 9, and it is as simple as this. The goal is universal care for all children. Now, we've been over this before, Dr. Elena. When the government starts using, and all the government cronies and partners and everybody else involved in all this mess, when they start using a word like universal or all, they're coming after every child, regardless of where they live, regardless of their situation, and regardless of where they're getting their education.
I would think it's probably going to start from the parents who are economically, more challenged first, because they have the least means and the least voice in terms of being able
right.
to fight. So they're going to come
but
for the lowest hanging fruit first, I would think.
Okay, but let's stop and think about reality, okay? You have less voice because you're told you have less voice, because I can point you to families of all types of situations who feel they have less voice in whatever educational setting it is, because they've been taught and told and had it rammed down their throats that they are underrepresented, that they are they don't have as much seat at the table, that they don't have as much voice. And you know what? In certain situations, we have allowed that to come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's think about it. You are a parent. God made you that parent. The government's going to try to yank that away from you. But the government has also been very successful in telling who has the voice, who has the power, and who has the means. We all have the power. We have more power than our government. We don't use it.
Well said. I agree. And it's everybody's voice counts. It's not you have to be with a group.
Right.
Right. It's all about you standing up for your child individually.
Right. Absolutely.
And it grows from there.
And you know what? Even if all this junk that is trying to be put into place, and it's coming. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's coming. You know, you have to stop and weigh, at what point am I going to say, well, I'm not going to protect my family anymore? Are you willing to go to jail to protect your children? Are you willing to sacrifice your life to protect your children? These are the kinds of questions we should be talking about, and the kinds of frameworks that we need to be getting those who are opposed to this thinking, because that's what it's going to come down to. What hill are you willing to die or surrender?
Mm-hmm. It's a big question. And that's a universal question in terms of everything and what we're dealing with in this world, whether it's education, healthcare, our jobs, you know, how we are treated by the government and each other, frankly. So I think you've just said a mouthful, and I think it's a great place to take a break, because that's something that people really need to get their minds around. The individual is the powerful person. It's not the group. It's not the monolith. It's everybody doing the right thing for the right reason in a way that helps them achieve their best good, their highest good for their family, for their loved ones. I think society would work so much better if everybody was in that energy state instead of, I just want to sit back and let someone take care of me. And if you don't, I mean, you're supposed to do it because you owe me. That mentality has been, I think, also probably foisted on us by the government. They've done a wonderful job of divide and conquer and making everybody look at the other person as the reason that they're not achieving what they should. And I think our parents are probably very much alike. It's, you know, get out there and work hard, pull yourself up. There's opportunity. It may not be what you think it is, but you have to keep moving forward to find it. So I think let's take our last break so people can, I think, get their minds around this. What we're talking about is important, but it's also important to get off your duff and do something, like you said. So on that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, and people can go again to your website, commoncorediva.com, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if they want to have you come and speak for them, speak for their group, is that the same website that they can go to contact you?
You can email me at info@commoncorediva.com. You can also find me on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, at Common Core Diva.
Sounds good. So let's segue, Lynn, into how this is promoted throughout society. You know, how are they, we're as a society, I think we're very passive, but how is this being threaded through? I mean, I know these are proposals, or are they already going into effect? I guess that's the first question I have.
Well, let's see here. These are policies that are being whispered into Congress's ear, because if you'll remember some of the groups that I listed off, they have horrendous power in Congress. So we're going to push it through taxation. We're going to push it through legislation. And with legislation is where a lot of these think tanks come in, because they are the ones who are said, well, the law says that, you know, A, B, C, and D. But my policy says that you can approach A, B, C, and D from all these different angles. Well, again, who is funding the think tank is how that policy is going to live out. Let's see here. On page 9, it tells us about legislation. Hang on just a second. I am looking at this. Oh, let's see here. They're going to use public-private partnerships as well to create more policy. Because if we can bury the family in policy, Dr. Elena, we're going to have them so confused. And so I don't know which end is up, that the only option they feel they have is, let me have the government help me. That's the whole point.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to be that, again, a template. It's so many things coming at you. This feeling of I'm overwhelmed. But also, I think we need to take responsibility. Instead of being overwhelmed, it's not just throw your hands up and let someone take care of me. It's examine it, right? It's being a critical thinker and figuring out, how does this, if I do, I mean, having a thought in your mind about it, if this does go down, come to pass, how is that going to affect my relationship with my child, my relationship as an individual who's free to work and do what I want, you know, to provide for my family? Do people never, it's like people don't think of that. It's like pablum, just feed me. Like one of these little birds right. where the parent just gives them food and they just keep their mouths open and just take it. That doesn't make sense mm-hmm. to me. It's foreign to me.
It really doesn't. But okay, you said let's take responsibility. Let's look at one thing that's glaring about all this. And that is not only social media, but regular media, as in what we consume. We are huge media consumers, whether it's television, movies, books, newspapers or whatever you want, magazines, all that kind of stuff. And over the years, there's been a shift of you have the power. We can certainly solve this problem by you taking responsibility for your family, to this collective stuff, to this, oh, let me have someone else go in and be the superhero for me. Now, what I mean is, if you go back, and I cannot remember the name of the movie, but it was one, and it was about Depression era, family of color in the Deep South back in the Depression. And they were being all kinds of discriminated against, and they had had enough. And it took the mom, it took a horrible situation, but it took the mom through that before she finally realized there's no government official, there's no friend, there's no anybody who can help me except God Almighty, and I'm going to protect my children. And she went on to not only get out of that horrible situation, but to go on to be a trailblazer for other families to follow suit and get themselves out of such horrible situations of discrimination and in poverty and all that kind of stuff. Those kind of movies used to be available to us. And it's not just that one example. There are several other kinds of examples as well. You've got one where people went and tried to escape corrupt government by going into a swamp and trying to build a city there. Mm-hmm. You've got all kinds of examples of people fighting back against the system. But what is being pumped out in front of us? We're all in this together. Oh, because of COVID, we all have business in your family. Oh, because of this thing, we have all the business in your family. Oh, because of this, you can't fight this alone. You let some superpower come in and take over. So the self-preservation, the self gumption, if you will, is being sucked out of us, and we're allowing it because what are we promoting? We're promoting every time we share, oh, I like this movie because, oh, well, there was this, this, and this, and the hero came in and he saved the day. Well, what happens when you're the hero? What happens when you take the initiative? We're not doing that.
I mean, it's like this collective inertia, or I think it's a combination. Some of it is society, mm-hmm. right? Where if you do stand up, somehow you're the bad person. You know, being an individual is, they've done a wonderful job of propaganda on individual freedom and personal responsibility. Somehow that takes away from somebody else, which is completely ridiculous. And I mean, if people, again, critical thinking, if people had the means to provide for their family, they wouldn't be dependent on government assistance or doling out or whatever they want to put it on. And the taxes would be lower. I mean, it's like this domino effect. Mm-hmm. If you stop mm-hmm. feeding this beast, it stops trying to gather more, right? You starve it.
Right.
And
right.
then you realize I'm much happier because I'm doing what I need to do for me mm-hmm. and my family. And mm-hmm. I'm in control. That's what we've as a society, maybe worldwide, has ceded control to some entity that we're finding out does not have our best interests at heart, does not protect us, could care less when it's found out that it did something that worked against us. And then it's like, oh, well, we just keep doing the same thing. We have to really stop doing the same thing, expecting a different result.
Well, look at the Department of Education, okay? We've been throwing money at the Department of Education left and right for over 40 years. And every year that money goes up. And look at the results we get. If you and I did that with our family budgets, we would probably be under the jail because we had, written so many bad checks and all this other, and been so corrupt and all this other kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But my point is, is when you hear the thing of, oh, well, we're going to shut down the Department of Education, I want you to stop and consider one thing. That's not going to solve the problem, because the money will still be thrown at education, but through different departments. So, like you said, you have to starve the, you have to starve the beast. And that phrase has been used in education by a dear friend of mine who I've lost contact with, but she used that all the time. Starve the beast, starve the tax, you know. And I know that a lot of people are going to hear that and go, but if I don't pay my taxes, I'm going to lose my car. I'm going to lose my house. I'm going to lose this. Okay, you're going to lose your car. You're going to lose your house. Would you rather lose your children?
When you think about it that way, there's no choice, is there?
Right, exactly. But no one wants to think that way, Dr. Elena, because that means they'd have to change. They'd have to get out of their comfort zone. And nobody wants to be out of their comfort zone when you have society and a government so corrupt telling you, oh, just stay in your comfy zone and we'll take care of you and we'll just do this. I mean, think about this. You've got new ads coming out where it's a new system, and I can't remember the name of it, but you just ask the phone what to do about your problem.
Oh, Gemini.
And the phone will tell you.
Yes.
What?
It's a Gemini AI from one of these phones.
That's it. That's it. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm sitting there listening to this parent. He's having parental problems. And he goes and he asks the blasted phone, what do I do? And I'm sitting here about to die because it's like, dude. You don't ask your stupid phone. You get off your bottom and you go find out what you do. And if you do it right, great. But guess what? Parents make mistakes, and that's okay. Because you know what? Sometimes we learn better from our mistakes. And we know, okay, that's not the way to solve that problem.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that's, to me, the frightening phenomenon. If that's what people are going to be doing, asking their phone about everything, I mean, from an education standpoint, no research, no, you know, ability to deep dive and follow, you know, rabbit trails of knowledge, right? You're having something spoon-feeded to you, which of course it's going to remove and censor whatever it deems mm-hmm. you should know. We're going to be the dumbest society and the most, you know, I don't know, placid, whatever said, well, just okay. That'll be the worst thing to happen to humanity if that comes, if it moves in the way that they want it to.
Well, AI is the ring through your nose the government's going to use to lead you around.
Mm-hmm. And you won't even know what you don't know. That's the sad part.
That's right. But let's stop and take that commercial for just a moment. Okay, we've got a dad who doesn't know what to do, and he asked the phone. Now, this is a healthy child. God forbid you've got a parent with a special needs child and you're not sure what to do, and you're going to go ask a computer what to do. No, 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 no. This is where humans are far superior. Because if I am a parent and I have a healthy child or a special needs child, I'm not going to go ask a computer. I'm going to ask somebody who's been there, done that,
mm-hmm.
or someone who I know that I can trust to help guide me into what to do.
That's a good point. I mean, everything that we just talked about for this hour, again, is a call to action to stop just giving your power away, your parental rights, your essence, your God-given, you know, soul, really, to let something that doesn't have your best interest in mind to take it over and run your life and live your life for you. That doesn't sound like being a human to me at all. You know, Lynn, time goes way too fast. Please let us know again how listeners can read what you write and contact you.
Okay, if you'd like to read anything that I have done, including all the podcasts that Dr. Elena and I have done, go to my website. There are several tabs that you can check out as far as past articles, search engines, podcast links, all kinds of things there. There's also a donation page, so if you wish to financially bless any of the work that I do, you can certainly do that as well. www.commoncorediva.com. If you wish for me to come and speak or do a presentation, info@commoncorediva.com is the email to use.
Lynn, I thank you so much. I just feel, again, it's a blessing to have you in my life and to know you and to be able to share you with my listeners. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Dr. Lena. And, you know, that's the one thing that is so neat about the way God puts us in each other's lives is so that we can be the iron that sharpens iron and the people who encourage others to go out there and to do what's right, to do what's morally sound, and to do what they can to do the thing that God put us in charge of, and that was to nurture and love our families.
I think you said it, and I couldn't say it any better. God is in control, and with his help, we can do anything. I'd like to thank you again for joining me today, Lynn, and I'd like to thank everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.